Hello, everybody. Welcome to this special episode of the Stash My Comics podcast. I am known on the forums as Matt B., and I have two guests with me today, Jason Newcomb and Chance Peterson. If you'd all like to say hello.
Hello.
Hey.
So we decided to take a page from Jason's list here on the forum, the best of 2011, and just sort of loosely talk about, you know, some of the best things that happened in the past year. And do you want to start off, Jason?
Yeah, sure.
Best ongoing title.
Best ongoing title. I chose Wonder Woman.
Okay.
This was a tough one because there's a few ongoings that I could have put up there, which I'll mention in a minute when we get to the other categories. But I picked Wonder Woman. I think this is probably the book in the first three issues where I most wanted to read the next one.
Right.
There were a lot of other great books that I enjoyed muchly while reading them, but Wonder Woman, something clicked in Wonder Woman that made me very much anticipate the next issue. Cliff Chang on pencils draws an excellent Wonder Woman. They've sort of reinvented the Wonder Woman mythology, where all the Greek gods are contemporized now or modernized. And they all have very much, whereas before the Greek gods had sort of nebulous authority over mortals. They could just snap their fingers and do basically whatever they wanted. And they were fluid that way. It looks like Azzarello and Chang are trying to cement what these different gods can do and make them distinct from one another. For instance, Apollo can, of course, when the sun comes up, he turns into a sort of living sun, and he can practice some sort of like visionary mysticism using humans as avatars. Mm-hmm. And you got Strife, who's able to cause people to fight amongst themselves and grow to a giant, and so on and so forth. So all these great add-ons to the mythology, these little tweaks have been really working out, the biggest of which, spoilers, it would appear that Wonder Woman is actually the bastard daughter of Zeus and Hippolyta. Hmm. So that changes Hippolyta's character quite a bit and creates a brand new conflict for Wonder Woman. Does she embrace this? Does she fight against this? How will she react to this news delivered by Strife herself? So there's a lot of really great things going on in this title, so I'm choosing it as the best ongoing, even though it's only three issues in. I have faith in it.
Right. Chance, what about you? Best ongoing title?
My best ongoing title, even though it hasn't been in the past few months, is Scarlet, which is a creator owned by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev.
Mm-hmm.
And I got their Daredevil run from a while back, really enjoyed that. So when I found out they were doing a creator-owned, I just went, all right, I got to pick this up. Because creator-owns, for me, are usually some of the better books because they just, you know, they get control. They can do whatever they want. It's been really interesting seeing how stuff that they thought up to write about, you know, back in, I think the last issue came out in May of this year, is now somewhat coming into play in the real world with, like, the Occupy movements, and it's kind of been interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that book, because it was a book that I totally forgot about. But I did pick up, like, the first five or six issues back when I had a comic book store I was regularly going to, And yeah, I enjoyed it. For what, you know, for budgetary reasons, I couldn't keep picking it up. But what issue are they up to now on that one?
They're on issue 6.
Okay.
Or issue 6 is supposed to be coming out sometime.
So there's been a delay, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I thought that might have been the case. Go ahead.
I read the first couple issues of that and lost interest. There's, if I remember properly, the basic premise is this one young woman, her name is Scarlet, whose those two issues had established that she's basically fed up with the injustice and decides to do something about it and pursues some criminals. So up to that issue, it was basically a straight-up vigilante story. Now, it sounds like things evolved from there and got quite a bit more interesting. So how did it change after issue 2?
It pretty much it is, as you said, is like a vigilante story where she's fed up with everything, that all the corruption that's going on. And what ends up happening is that other people start finding out about this. They find out some of the backstory of why she's doing it, and they all start supporting her. And it's really, like, it's intense, or I think it is, just seeing how, like, one person can really just get people riled up and want something to happen.
Yeah, and I like the conflict with her. You know, she is kind of put up on this pedestal, if I remember, by these people, and she's surprised by it, but the drama that surrounds her making this decision, because she's basically made a choice to become one of the most wanted people in the United States, I would suppose. She's taken out cops, crooked cops, and things like this. So it's interesting to see her basically give up her old life and start this new life. You know, there's no turning back. She's either going to keep going or she's going to eventually be imprisoned or dead. So I do like that drama aspect of it.
I do remember when this first came out, some fans of Alex Maleev were disappointed because this looked more photo referenced. But I remember reading this, and I had noticed that myself. It looked splendid from what I could tell.
Yeah, I was perfectly. I really liked his work on it. You know, I've listened to interviews with him where he says this is his favorite work is right now on Scarlet.
Yeah, it does seem to be heavily photo-referenced, but you never know. He might be just gaining inspiration. I think a lot of people assume that they're just taking photographs and essentially putting graphics on top of them, but I know somebody who paints in a similar method, but he basically references the picture as opposed to actually copying it, you know, painting on top of it, so to speak. Well, I picked best ongoing title. You know, it was a little confusing for me because I read mostly DC, and with all their new stuff coming out, it was like, well, ongoing to me says that it's something that's been going out for a while, but that's why I went with Birds of Prey, because I enjoyed it before the relaunch, and I have been enjoying it since the relaunch. And obviously, Gail Simone wrote it before, and now they have a new writer, new art team, and I still like it. So that's why it kind of put itself above anything else I had even considered. If we want to move on to best story arc, Jason, go ahead.
Best story arc, I'm going to have to say what's currently going on in Animal Man. The story arc is called The Hunt, and this was a contender for best ongoing title, but lost out to Wonder Woman. The Hunt is essentially establishes Buddy Baker, who is Animal Man, establishes him as a family man. And it's very fascinating how Jeff Lemire is fleshing out these characters and how they're portrayed by Travel Foreman, the artist. They're very believable. They do behave like a family does around the kitchen counter. Mom and dad have their own tensions and their own little communication going on while the pitter-patter of the kids is going on, and they're creating all sorts of havoc. But then you complicate matters even more with Buddy Baker having these animal powers, and suddenly his daughter starts to manifest powers as well. And she is quite a bit more powerful than Buddy is, and she actually guides Buddy into this kind of other realm that she refers to as the Red, and they meet like these beastly avatars of the Red who represent like all fleshly life, and you got this whole other thing of people trying to undermine the Red and their avatars of rot, and it's all sorts of crazy stuff. But framed in family life, which is what cements this as best story arc. It's the juxtaposition of those two contrasting themes and those two different, vastly different aspects of comic books that just makes this particularly special.
Okay. Chance?
Mine, I'm probably gonna go with the recent Spider Island story arc. Now, I've talked about it somewhat with other people on the forums where it's really setting stuff up for what's hopefully gonna be really exciting next year. And Spider-Man's still trying to figure stuff out in his like new setup of his life, where everything is, what's going on, how people are changing their thought process of who he is. And since he's such an iconic character that's cemented in comic book history, it's hard to really get somewhere that people change their view on him.
Yeah, do
Yeah,
you
that's.
go ahead.
I was just about to say that's a good point. How writers in superhero comics, the superhero genre, the big challenge is to keep things fresh. When you come to a character like Spider-Man or Batman with so much history and so much built-in iconic status, to actually make a story arc interesting and take the character to a new place is, I'm glad they're the writers and I'm not.
Yeah, and that was part of what was going to lead into my question, just for chance, because I don't read any Spider-Man. But do you just read this Spider-Man, or do you read the other one in the Ultimate Universe?
I actually have started reading the Ultimate Spider-Man. I picked up like the last couple issues of the last series where it was still Peter Parker, and now this current one where it's Miles.
Yeah, it
And
looked interesting to me. I just was curious if you heard so much about it first off, and then it's kind of died down since it's been going on. But it sounds like a fresh take, for somebody who might be tired of all the Peter Parker stuff.
yeah, it definitely is. And a lot of the, there was a lot of noise about it because it was changing. It wasn't Peter Parker.
Right.
And then you have all these people deciding to put their own spin on it and why it's happening and whatever. But it's just a comic. Read it, enjoy it.
Exactly. Don't
It
think too hard
is a
about
good, yeah, it is a good book right now.
it. Okay. Well, you mentioned Batman earlier, Jason, and that's part of the reason why, for my best story arc, I picked Snyder's run on Detective Comics, and I believe that went from 871 to 881. And while it wasn't extremely Batman-heavy, per se, which Detective Comics is often a little different that way, it hit on a lot of interesting notes in terms of the relationship between Gordon and his son, and it basically turned out to be like a gigantic horror story where you find out that his son is not reformed, he is completely crazy, and he's Joker crazy, and just some really great art and some really great moments. Did anybody else read this?
I did not.
Definitely, I don't think I did either.
Yeah, definitely go back and check it out, especially if you're a fan of like horror and mystery and things like that. It basically revolves around James Gordon's son, and I didn't know much about him, but apparently he has some mental issues, some mental instabilities, and he comes back acting like he's all reformed. He's on this new medication, and they're kind of watching him with a close eye, and what you find out is that he is completely the opposite of reformed, and he's just super creepy, and, you know, it was a very realistic villain for Batman to have to tackle. And, of course, this was the not the Bruce Wayne Batman. This was the Dick Grayson Batman. But definitely should check it out. 871 Detective Comics through 881. And some really good art in here as well. So next we go to... Did anybody answer Best Collected Edition? That was one I left blank.
No, I think everybody pretty much skipped that one. I mean, we're a comic book site that caters mostly to collectors. I think most people are buying single issues.
Right. So maybe we'll move to, like, do you want to just move to Best Publisher?
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody has a different opinion here.
I'm going pound for pound with Image.
Okay.
I think in its weight class, there is no better publisher. They are putting out so much stuff, and so much of it happens to be good. I'm not reading a lot of it because even though a lot of it is good, though I can recognize a lot of it is good, and none of it is selling. But what I do from them, I can bring a series, this Carbon Gray, that's kind of gone under the radar a little bit, but definitely like. These guys' Image is on the up. They got the Walking Dead Robert Kirkman, and they got all sorts of excellent series they're putting out. And if any publisher could justify selling their stuff at $4, it's Image, because the whole creator-owned thing and lower print runs and that sort of thing. But they're not. They're mostly selling it at $3.50. With no, I think they put ads all at the end of their books. So they, in terms of PR, marketing, also their adaptations, they got The Walking Dead on AMC. And the excellent series that they're putting out and constantly churning new material, trying to see what readers connect with, I'm going to go with Image for Best Publisher.
Okay, good choice. Chance, what about you?
I'm going to go with DC.
Okay.
I think that it was a big risk for them to do the New 52. You know, I hadn't really read much from them before that. The fact that they've gotten me to nearly half of my comics that I buy are DC comics now, that says a lot, at least to me, for them. I think, you know, they had the drawing line at $2.99. That was a big help because I don't have that much money to spend on comics. So It gives me a chance to read more. They put no good stories. And overall, I mean, they really just won me over a lot over this past few months.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel the same way. And I chose DC, which is pretty obvious because that's what I mostly read and talk about. But I was a little worried when they took this big risk. I wanted to think positively, but deep down I was thinking, I don't see how this is going to work. But it really did work, and they have seen their sales increase. And like Chance was saying, a lot of people who weren't picking it up are picking it up. And I think Marvel had better take a hard look at their price line, because really, if their stuff was $2.99, I would be dipping my toes a lot more in some of the stuff that they do. But given that just about everything is $3.99, I just don't even start.
I think a lot of fans, like on the internet, when DC announced New 52, sort of, I think we all overestimated the risk. So yeah, I think a lot of people were overestimating the risk that DC was taking. It made sense for them to do this because they hadn't done anything like it in several decades. And their trend has been to sort of like do the housework every couple of decades. And the sales were down, and creatively they were probably, subjectively speaking, they were stagnant. And really, retrospect, like, where are people going to go buy books? They basically can go to Marvel, Image, or DC.
Right.
So, were every DC fan like, were they really going to drop like DC? Like, I don't know. Like, comic book fans want their comic books. So if there's something new happening, even if they I can see somebody being with DC for say the last 20 years and saying, ah, the hell with it, and quitting. But most people haven't been with DC for 20 years. Most people have been with DC on and off for a certain amount of years. So most people were going to check out what was going on in this New 52 thing.
Right.
So I think it just made sense from their point of view to just do something new and fresh and just boost sales.
Yeah, and I think it's good for comic books in general. You know, whenever anybody in the industry does better, it encourages everybody to do better. And just means hopefully more attention given to the genre, so we can keep it up and continue to grow and continue to have new things to read. The next thing on the list was the best writer. Jason?
Oh, the best writer. I'll say Grant Morrison.
Okay.
Grant Morrison has – I'll tell you why I think he's the best writer. I did not like Grant Morrison. My first experience with him was with Batman RIP.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into that event thinking this is going to be like a Batman story, like a detective story. And it turned out to be like a super meta-textual, crazy cosmic, thing. Or I don't know if cosmic's the right word, but ethereal, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
Mm.
And not expecting that, I thought Grant lacked the ability to write a mainstream script, a linear narrative. But when my wife got me a present on audible.com,
mm-hmm.
she got me Grant Morrison's book called Super Gods.
Mm.
And it's about superheroes, and he's intertwined his philosophy about superheroes and comic books in with the story of his career. And it gave me a lot of insight into what he's trying to do with comic books. And I gained a lot of respect for what he's trying to accomplish with the genre of superheroes. He has a lot of respect for the genre and for the right reasons. So I've found that I identified a lot with his point of view on superheroes and comic books. So since then, I've been reading a lot more Grant Morrison. I picked up some books from the library, and I picked up his Action Comics, and have found myself to really enjoy his scripts and his ideas that he's putting forth in his stories. I don't agree or like everything that he espouses or writes about, or every single story that he puts together, but I think he's a very fascinating individual and definitely one of the better writers of our generation.
Okay, I'm sure you're probably not alone in that sentiment. Chance, who did you pick?
I picked Brian Michael Bendis.
Okay. Also another popular choice.
Yeah, since I've been reading comics, when I first started, this was one of the writers that I was told, look at his stuff, you'll like it. So from the start, I've been picking up his stuff, reading it. It really got me into comics. I think he's still continued to do very well. He's not stagnant in what he's doing. He's putting out new ideas all the time. For example, we were talking about the new Ultimate Spider-Man. Even if people weren't sure about it, he went ahead with it, and I think it's successful. I know other people are buying it, so that clearly shows he's still writing well. And kind of like Jason said, it's not necessarily, I don't enjoy every single thing he writes. For example, the Fear Itself run in this current Avengers series was, I thought was terrible. But I put that more on Marvel doing a event story that limits his abilities. And what I think probably most drew me to him, and what I've really enjoyed this year about him, is his character development and how he makes the characters not only, just these people that I'm reading about. It's, I know this character. I feel like empathy for stuff that goes wrong, or if something goes right, you want to root for him. And he even manages to do that with like villains that he writes. And you're like, well, what is this? Why do I want to read this? Why is it so compelling? And it just, he's done such a great job on anything that he's written, most things that he's written so far this year.
Okay.
I definitely think Brian Michael Bendis is very strong with character, and I think he that's mostly manifest with his use of dialogue. It seems that whenever I pick up a Bendis book, it's mostly people just talking, and it's fascinating to read just because the way they talk to one another is so believable and entertaining.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this the other day. As kids, when we read comics, the character development wasn't as important as I think it is as we get older. We kind of long to see and read situations that we can identify with. When I was a kid, it was all about, the action and the violence and all the crazy stuff happening. And now, like you said, just those quiet moments of conversation where they're talking about normal things, it instantly brings them down to our level, makes them more relatable. So then you can go see them, try to save the world, and it's a little bit easier to follow. I chose best writer for me, Gail Simone, and I could not ignore her work on Secret Six, and that's the big reason why I chose her. And also her work on Birds of Prey. She has a great way of taking characters that you normally could care less about and make you care about them. And that's super important to me when I'm reading. And I love the big characters, the Batmans, the Supermans, the Spider-Mans, the Hulks, all the stuff we grew up on, but I'm really more interested in some of these B and C list characters, learning about them, learning their personality. And I find myself going back to her, the whole Secret Six run that she did, and her latest run of Birds of Prey, time and time again. I've gone through them, you know, three or four times, and just really enjoy them. And I know a lot of other people that enjoy Secret Six too. And I hope if somebody's listening out there that in DC that they do bring Secret Six back at some point.
Now, being a fan of Gail Simone's, had you tried the Firestorm that she was co-writing with Van Sciver?
I did, and it didn't feel like Gail Simone's writing to me as a whole. There were some bits and moments, and I was interested at first, but ultimately it didn't make the cut because I just couldn't bring myself to really care about Firestorm long term. And I think since she was co-writing with somebody else, and from interviews that I read with her, her and the other man, the other guy writing, I can't remember his name right this second.
Van Sciver.
Yeah. They have very different opinions on the world in general. And I think they were hoping that it was one of those situations where, oh, this is just so crazy, it might work. And I just think maybe ultimately it didn't work. I don't know why she left or why she was taken off of it. It could be something very simple. It could be something with conflict within their personalities. But I'm really enjoying Batgirl, but decided not to keep up with the Firestorm book.
Fair enough.
Well, what's next on the list? Best artist.
I guess I go first. Yep. Best artist, I'm choosing Francis Manapul.
Okay.
Mostly for his work on The Flash. He was what kept me reading when I was growing exasperated with the lead ups to when The Flash became the book that was leading up to Flashpoint, and it started to falter because of that. Manapul kept me coming. Just his creative ways of depicting speed and motion in a static medium was really impressive, but he very much won me over with when he took over writing, because it's become this Flash book, the last three issues have become an example of how comics are a visual medium, and when you have an artist with some writing skills, their ability to transform the script into something that's visually alive is quite fascinating to read. And The Flash, I get the impression, I've wanted to ask Francis, and hopefully someday we'll get him on a podcast or an interview to ask him, like, do you guys script this out, or do you just do straight up, you know, visual layouts, thumbs, and then finish up your roughs? Because it very much feels like he's telling the story visually, like the priority is on the visual storytelling. And this book has become like something that's like very, like in my opinion, it's very important in superhero comics, like just as a testament of what the comics medium can do.
Okay. I think that's a good choice.
So if Francis Manapul is listening, no pressure, but Flash is the most important comic book in comics for a long time.
I actually had a great poster that the comic book store I was going to gave me with when he restarted the Flash before the, I guess he wasn't writing it, but his art was on it before the New 52. And it's just a great vertical poster of Flash, you know, running. And I like his sort of more simple art style, kind of understated. And he has a great use of his color palettes. It's it's not overly detailed, and some of it's a little boxy at times, but it's not in a bad way. It's very original. Chance, who was your pick?
Right. This was really tough for me, just because I've been told by people I have the weird sense for art that I'll pick up a book. I could love the story. If I don't like the art, I'll drop it. And I can be really picky about it. And for me, it really depends on the story that's being told. Because I can pick up one book with one artist, absolutely love it, see that same artist on a different story, and go, can't read it. So I'm going to go and just go with the one that when I pick it up, I just looked at it and went, this art's awesome, without looking at the book. I'm probably going to pronounce this wrong. It's Sana Takeda. She has drawn the past couple issues of X-23. It's really realistic looking art. And that, like I said, it's not necessarily something I'd always like. But for that moment when I opened up the book and I'm like, wow, this looks awesome. And that's probably like the first time, or one of the only times this year that I've done that, where I'm just astounded by the art when I open it. I think that just speaks, you know, out just a lot, that you can get that reaction from someone.
Sure. Yeah, this was.
I'm looking at it. Sorry, go. I'll talk all over you. That's what I'll do. I'm looking at the artwork now. I'm actually quite impressed. It reminds me of a little bit like Stanley Lau. It's got a vaguely digital look to it, but so that may be the. What's giving it this hyper-realistic look. I'm actually liking the style that she draws it.
All right. I had a hard time with this, as I'm sure you guys did too, because there's so many different styles of art, but mine was kind of a toss-up between two people with very different styles. I will mention first Mike Allred, and I don't know if anybody here reads iZombie, but he's got a really interesting sort of pop art style. The comics look kind of like a throwback. He uses a pretty wide range color palette, but like Francis Manapole, is very sort of understated and simplified a little bit. I really enjoyed sort of the style that he is using for the entire iZombie run. It's one of my favorite books. And then on the flip side, you know, with a more realistic sort of over-the-top detailed look, I really like the stuff, and I'm going to probably mispronounce his name. I know his last name is March. That's easy. But the first name, I want to say it's Guillem, G-U-I-L-L-E-M. Is that right?
Yeah, he drew a bunch of Joker's Asylum one-shots a couple years ago, and he's currently drawing Catwoman.
Right. Yeah, I started looking at his stuff quite a bit from when he was doing the Gotham City Siren stuff. And when Catwoman came out, I wanted to pick it up basically just because he was drawing it. I know he's done some Batman and Robin work and a lot of different covers, but I don't know. I just like the way that he draws both characters, female and male. It's really kind of over the top. He draws their noses and their eyes in this very particular way where if you jump right in a book, you can tell that it's him. And I kind of like that about the way he draws.
Yeah, he has a very distinctive art style. He just got an art book published you might want to check out. Don't know what it's called. If you just Google Guillem March art book, and it's a lot of the stuff that he did while he was working for European comics before he was doing the mainstream DC stuff.
I'll have to check that out. Well, now we're up to best single issue. Jason?
Best single issue is one of the best issues I've ever read. It's the Gorilla Grodd, Grodd of War Flashpoint tie-in.
Oh, I love that one. Good choice.
That this book is packs more characterization and in one single issue than a lot of writers can do in an entire story arc or in their entire career sometimes. This book made me want more existential gorilla books. It yeah. was awesome. Yeah, it's funny, but violent, and it's got great action, excellent dialogue. Where's this Sean Ryan guy in the New 52? We need him to write a Gorilla Grodd book.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, I know you're not the only one who wanted that to be more than a one-shot. There's a lot of people reviewing that really liked it. And for those of you who haven't read it, if you like the idea of reading about an extremely smart and powerful gorilla basically being bored out of his mind because he's conquered the entire continent of Africa, then you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, he's one of the best moments of the book is like in Flashpoint, Aquaman floods most of Europe, and Gorilla Grodd is lamenting the fact that everybody is giving Aquaman credit for doing this horrible thing, whereas he's slaughtered the entire continent of Africa, and nobody pays attention to him, so he's all depressed about that.
Yeah,
it was very, very good.
And then he proceeds to, I guess he dismantles, I think, Kong Gorilla and Catman during the yeah. course of that book.
Yeah, yeah.
Really brutally, yeah. Well, Chance, what about you?
All right, again, this was tough just because it's very hard to pick one issue that I really liked over anything else. And I'm going to have to go with Detective Comics number 1 from this New 52 relaunch. It fit exactly what I wanted out of that book at that moment. And it really, I felt it did a really good job at putting the two sides of Batman together, Batman and Bruce Wayne. It had a dark feel and then a lighter feel, and it just kept on had just such great balance where it needed to be.
Yeah, I haven't read any of the new Detective Comics. Jason, have you read any of the new, since the new launch, Detective Comics?
No, I have. I didn't try Detective Comics. I think the artist is, who's the artist? Is it Tony Daniels?
Yes.
That's a name. That's a name when he's on a book. Sorry, I can't do it. Like, his artwork is not to my liking, so I just I took a pass on that one.
It's hard. There's so many Batman books. You wind up, if you're on a budget like most of us are, you wind up just picking two or three, and then you know some that would otherwise be really good just kind of fall by the wayside. For my best single issue, I chose one that I reviewed on the -mycomics.com website, plug, and it was All-Star Western number 1, which, funny enough, I haven't been reading since that first issue, but that's mostly a price point thing. I want to pick it up when it's in trade because I think it's going to read better that way and just look better. But for me, it was one of the first issues I read with the New 52. I was so excited about all that going on, and it had everything that I needed to see in a book. It had Jonah Hex, who I love as a character. It had really different kind of gritty art and a pretty deep story. And you don't see Jonah Hex get to interact with a lot of people, and in this case, he did. And it was just a really perfect first issue for me. And so that's why I chose it. And I'm looking forward to reading it, but I'm definitely going to get it at a discounted price.
Yeah, and that Jonah Hex issue was extra sized, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a little bit larger. Yep. Which makes it worth the $3.99, but, you know, if I can pick up more $2.99 ones, or in my case, when I wait a month later, $1.99, it just makes me feel better about my wallet, my decreasing wallet size. Best, let's see. Well, I guess we can skip best one shot. Let's go to best cover.
The best cover. I went with Shield. That's S dot H dot so on. The Jonathan Hickman and Dustin Weaver series at Marvel, which is surprisingly in continuity and tells the story of the battle of fate versus free will, and how hope is the dividing factor. So light reading. The cover is by Dustin Weaver, and Weaver has a painterly style for his covers, which could tenuously be compared to Alex Ross if Alex Ross didn't draw like in the Golden Age sensibility or Silver Age sensibilities that he often uses. The covers, the compositions, this one's a triangular composition. It's got two floating heads and one character powering up in the middle. It's just a very nice, like, gallery quality cover. It's a cover that you can hang up on the wall. And to top it off, you've got what I'm assuming is Jonathan Hickman's logotype work, because out of all the Marvel logos, this one stands above and shoulder, so I'm assuming it's not by Marvel's regular designers, who, in my opinion, are a little bit on the weaker side or perhaps have too much of a workload. Mm-hmm. But this does remind me of Jonathan Hickman's work in Nightly News and books like that. So the whole package is very well put together, and it's a beautiful work of art.
Chance, what about you? Favorite cover?
This, I thought I knew which one I was going to go with. It was Venom number 9. And then I got my books on Wednesday and changed it to Carnage USA number 1.
Hmm.
Now, the cover it looks so cool to me. It's Carnage wrapped up in an American flag. And it's hard to really describe. It looks awesome.
It looks very very alien. Like, I've never seen Carnage drawn with a glossy look like this before.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he looks much more monster-like than I've seen him drawn.
And there's all sorts of tendrils and or whatever you would call them coming off of the American flag, almost like a plant. Pretty weird.
Yeah, and it looks like they're actually, like, the Carnage symbiote is actually maybe absorbing the American flag, because mm-hmm. the tendrils have the colors of the flag. It's pretty cool.
It really is. And like you said, he looks more monstrous, which is great, because that is Carnage.
Right.
Like, yeah. He's just crazy, and it just really does, I think it does justice to the character, the way this cover is drawn.
Indeed.
Chose Detective Comics 880. This was a cover by Jock, and during
good.
Scott Snyder's run. And just out of all the books that I have, you know, over the last year, that were sitting in my stack, I kept coming back to this cover. And it's basically a Joker cover, but what he's done is, it's not only a really creepy Joker, but the Joker looks like he's kind of disintegrating, like his head is disintegrating, and there are all these little bats flying off, and he's got these disgusting teeth and the bat symbols in his eyes, and there's a really simple, understated white background, so it's basically just black, white, and orange, reddish, and it was really different from all the other covers in this particular run of Scott Snyder's that really stood out.
Yeah, it's got a very strong design sense in the color scheme, and it uses some half tones as well for an effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially like the Joker's stubble.
Yeah.
I think that's a little detail there that I think is cool. That's a great pick.
Yeah. All right, what's next on the list? Best cover artist.
So evidently, I go with Dustin Weaver, who has been drawing the Shield covers. He's been doing interiors too, which is just as good as the covers. And it's on the shelf. These covers really stand out. So Dustin Weaver.
All right, Chance, did you go with the same artist of your favorite cover, or somebody different?
I didn't originally have anything on there, but if the covers continue to look like this, then Clayton Crane's definitely going to be on my list from now on.
Huh. I went with Cliff Chang, and he did a number of covers that I really liked on the Justice League Generation Lost series. And it's pretty typical of his artwork, but I just remember when I picked up the series, just a lot of the covers had this very sort of iconic look to them, almost like oftentimes they were some sort of propaganda from like the 40s and 50s look to it, and just a lot of really good stuff. I can't remember the exact number of issues that he drew, but if you take a look through that series, which was about 24 issues, there's a good third of them in there that were done by him, and you can definitely tell when he's done the covers.
Yeah, he's currently drawing the covers and interior for Wonder Woman.
Oh, double duty. Okay, well, we got that covered.
Oh, you didn't.
Joke. I don't think anybody chose. Did anybody choose a best inker?
No, I didn't go with inkers. All my favorite artists either have their own inkers or is done digitally as they're penciling. So I didn't choose that.
Chance, do you have any of these three, the inker, colorist, letter, that you want to mention?
No, I don't have anything for them.
Yeah,
I have a colorist. The colorist on Flash, Brian Buccolato, sometimes with Dave McCaig.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because the color palette is so distinctive, they're using harken back to a Silver Age sensibility with the colors, but also do it in a less loud manner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice little kind of balancing act there. And some of the pages even are, the color is key to telling the story or the way the page is conveying information.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't colored, you wouldn't understand the page. So you can really tell that these guys are working in tandem. They got good kung fu going on in this book.
So we're going to move along with our last two sort of end of the year items. We're going to go with a biggest disappointment and then biggest news item. So we can end on an upswing here as we head into 2012. Jason, biggest disappointment.
I am going with the ending of Flashpoint. Probably Flashpoint altogether, but most specifically the ending. The first issue, maybe the second one too, were not too bad, but this, I realized that DC has fans that have a craving for everything to fit, that it needs to work in continuity, but it created a need to shoehorn so many things into the ending of Flashpoint so that some fans would have the satisfaction of having an in-continuity explanation for the New 52, and it was just ridiculous to me. Like it just, it's not a story. It didn't, it wasn't a story. It was a layout explaining a thing that doesn't need to be explained. So it was just, I just feel it didn't need to happen.
Okay. Fair enough. Chance?
My biggest disappointment is Marvel, just in general,
Oh.
the company.
Marvel in general.
Wow.
Extremely disappointed in them.
Just
I said
in
earlier
like their
that
price points or creatively or just as a whole?
as a whole.
Okay.
So, there's good parts of Marvel. They have some good writers and artists, some good books, but as a whole, as a company, they've let me down this year. I went into this year almost exclusively Marvel, except for two books, and now I'm down to, I think I have like seven Marvel books, and I'm gonna be dropping all but three of them by February.
Okay.
They didn't produce anything that like is huge. I think they're getting trampled by DC right now, and they need to change what they're doing to, improve their company.
The pendulum has swung.
Yeah, they need to do something. I don't know what that would be. I think maybe the Ultimate Universe, while it's a great idea, it might be confusing to some. And also, certainly their price points should come down. And yeah, I don't know what else they can do. I don't know how badly they are losing, but I guess as we get into 2012, if they're still sort of losing, they're going to have to do something. I don't know what that'll be, but it'll be exciting. And my biggest disappointment was something I haven't even seen, so I don't know how I could be disappointed with it, but the fact that the Wonder Woman series, the TV series, never came to fruition was disappointing to me. I really
Yeah,
wanted this to
that's
happen.
that's a good one. Yeah, that would have been nice to see.
Have you seen the pilot? Can you even legally see the pilot? I don't know.
I think I don't know. I think it was released. I think it was leaked.
I don't remember ever seeing the pilot. I remember seeing all kinds of, pictures and everything, and I was really looking forward to it, but
Yeah. I'll have to see if I can get a hold of that.
If only to increase chances of us seeing a Wonder Woman movie, because so help me, if we see an Aquaman movie before Wonder Woman, I'm gonna punch somebody.
Hey, you know, we were watching Elf the other day. This is a little side. And who's the actor I'm trying to think of that plays the little person? You know who I'm talking about? He's also in the Narnia movies. Great actor.
Not familiar.
Let me see if I can find it. You know who I'm talking about, Chance? In the Elf movie, the guy with the beard, the little person.
No, I have no idea.
You guys should check that movie out because everybody's saying that if they make a Wonder Woman movie, that he should be Dr. Psycho. He looks exactly like him.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't find his name. Oh well. So moving on to the, what is it? The, what was
Most
the positive spin?
important.
Yes, most important news item. Jason?
Obviously, it's the DC rebooting with Day and Date Digital. I think that's going to, it's not, we're not going to see how that affects the comic book market yet. But I think in the long run, we're going to look back on this event as a momentous one in comic book history. DC, the DC reboot in tandem with Day and Date.
Okay. Chance?
I completely agree with Jason. That was definitely the biggest news item. Everyone was talking about it. And I think people are going to keep talking about it for most of next year.
Yep, I concur. There's really nothing else that's going to top that. And by the way, I found who the actor was. Peter Dinklage was in Chronicles of Narnia. He's in Game of Thrones, movie Underdog. He's an awesome actor. But if you look at this guy and then you look at a picture of Dr. Psycho, I mean, that is the role. He has to play that role if they come out with that. But it doesn't seem like it's ever going to happen because they couldn't even get a television series off the ground.
Oh, yeah, it does look like Dr. Psycho.
Now, what are you guys looking forward to in 2012, just quickly in terms of comics and in general?
I kept thinking, like, what am I looking forward to in 2012? And I can't think of anything in comics specifically that I've heard of that I can't wait for 2012. So I could pick the movies, mm-hmm. but I think that's, I don't know, it's a little too obvious. So I'm actually going to be self-serving here and say I'm looking forward to StashMyComics.com exploding with awesomeness. Because a lot of good things are happening behind the scenes, and that we've been leaking news updates on the blog about this podcast, more and more people getting involved, and some things that are being worked on that I don't want to say too much about. But like, I think it's going in a direction that's going to cause it to become a lot bigger than a lot of people think it can become. I think Stash My Comics is going to become much more. It's going to be talked about by a lot more people in 2012. We've got the member reviews that are coming up, and we're going to amp that feature up so that it's even more awesome. We've got more and more writers, and two, not just one podcast, but two, mm-hmm. and two different ones. It just feels like the time is right for this site to get pretty quite a bit bigger than it is now.
Yeah, and on the way over here, I was thinking it would be nice at some point. I mean, obviously, money's an issue for a lot of us, but if we could get to one of the comic book conventions and sort of, you know, mingle with the other podcasters and sort of get our name out that way, I think that would be a lot of fun if we could swing it.
Well, I don't want to say too much, but you know, like that's a possibility. That idea may become more of a reality than you think. But
okay,
yeah. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right. Well, this has been the Stash My Comics podcast, end of the year show, where we talked about everything that happened in, not everything, all the good stuff that happened in comics for 2011. We hope you enjoyed the show, and if you want to email the show, you can email podcast@stashmycomics.com. As always, you are welcome to go on to the forums and mingle with other people, and don't forget to check out the Chase Variant podcast. Same RSS feed, same iTunes place, and don't forget to leave us some reviews so we can start working our way up there. Anyways... go ahead.
Sorry, I wanted to plug our Twitter as well, which is at Stash My Comics. We always update the site there on the social media, so also follow us on Twitter.
Yes, Twitter, Facebook. Are you kids still doing the MySpace thing? No. Okay. Or MySpace. Well, I want to thank Chance for joining us. This was cool to have a third person.
I enjoyed being here. I mean, it's a different feel than the other podcast, for sure. Mm-hmm. But I still enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, and I hope to join you guys sometime on the roundtable discussion. Maybe I can... when do you guys typically do that now? Fridays, you said?
Friday night, usually. Okay. We record.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. And all of you out there, have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2012.
Toodly-doo.